I'm Georgie Crawford. You're listening to the Good Glow podcast. Throughout my treatment for breast cancer, I've realised the importance of self-care. Whether it's a trip to the gym, a checkup with your GP, or even a five-minute meditation, the time has come for us to put ourselves higher on our own to-do list. I'm so proud to be teaming up with Fitbit again in 2020. I want to continue on my path of self-discovery and set myself new challenges this year. Often it's only when we're tested that we're awakened to our true potential. I recently completed a 12K run in the Swiss Alps, something I never thought I could do. But with Fitbit by my side, I'm able to stay focused on my health fitness journey, continue to be motivated to go after my goals and to track my progress too. And with that, I'm surprising myself every single day. This week on the Good Glow podcast, I speak to Nikki Whelan. Nikki is a mum of two with another baby on the way. She's built two successful businesses, Backstreet Dance and Little Bo Pip, with her mum Tina, her business partner and best friend. Nikki's family were left devastated when Tina was diagnosed with leukemia and passed away shortly afterwards. Today, Nikki tells me about her beautiful mum, how they navigate life without her, and how, although she is not here physically, she is with them all every single day. Nikki Whelan, welcome to the Good Glow podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I can't believe I'm sitting here.
It's weird. I have this connection. I had a connection first with your dad, which is probably a really weird thing to say. But and I suppose we worked our way back from there. I met your dad at the Gossy Awards in 2019. We were sitting at the same table. And he came up to me and he had lost your mum less than a year before, and I had just finished my treatment for cancer. And as we were leaving the hotel, he came up, because I don't think he knew my story until I went on
your story
the stage.
Until, like, I obviously knew your story and I was just in awe of you, but he didn't know your story. It was only until you did your acceptance speech that I could see his face going purple. Like, he was like, oh my God, like, this woman, you know? So, and I'm really surprised that he actually took the guts to approach you, because that's not him. But there was just, like you say, there was like that connection of something. He just obviously had something that he wanted to say, or, you know, I don't know. It's not like an understanding, because nobody ever understands anybody's situation, but it was like an understanding, if you know what I mean.
It was like an unspoken
but
it was lovely. And we'll talk more about your dad as the podcast goes on, and your mum and your beautiful family. But first of all, congratulations, girl boss of the year. Another award. You've built two successful businesses, Backstreet Dance and Little Bo Pip. And I was just saying to you before we came on, do people call you by your Instagram name, Little Bo Pip? And you said sometimes. But tell us a little bit about, I suppose, where that drive came for you to start up these businesses. And I know, as we were talking during the week, you were saying times have been tough in the past, but you've gotten through the tough times. So tell us a little bit about, let's start with the dance business.
Okay, so that was obviously my very first baby. I've been very entrepreneurial for pretty much all my life. So I went through school. I've always been a dancer, classically trained from the age of three, always went to ballet. My mom was, I was obviously my mom's first little girl, and it was like, just want her to do ballet. And went to school, got through school, and then I knew I wanted to be a dancer. And you know, in school, they give you this like textbook and you choose what course you want to do, but dance wasn't in the book. So I was like, I really, like, that's what I want to do. And you feel stupid saying it. Or are they going to laugh at me? Like, are your teachers even going to laugh? And they kind of, not that they weren't supportive, but they weren't really encouraging. They're like, okay, but maybe you might want to pick this and have dance as your backup or something like that. So I just, I knew what I wanted to do. Me and my best friend Jen, we wanted to be dancers, and that was that. So we found a course in Inchicore where it was a 2-year dance course, and that was like our dream. And like, for us to be able to get on a bus together, like, to go to, like, take two buses over there every single day to train. Like, we were only 17 leaving school. So it was like a huge adventure for us. But we did it. We did 2 years of dance. I loved it. And then after college, it was like, okay, now what do we do? Jen knew what she wanted to do. Like, she was a ballerina inside and out. She wanted to go to London. She wanted to pursue, you know, her teacher's degrees, all of that kind of thing. I wasn't the very balletic, like what you needed as a requirement. So I was kind of using that as my excuse because I couldn't leave home. I couldn't, like, the cord was not cut between me and my mom. And there was no way I could go.
And tell us a little bit about your family. So you have lots
of eldest.
Sisters.
I have three sisters and a brother, and I'm the eldest.
Okay. So yeah. You and your mum were besties.
Oh my God. Yeah, we were literally besties. Like, she always said that we grew up together. Like, she was, what, 21 when she had me. But, like, back in the day, that was old. She married my dad at 19, mm-hmm. you know, and then 21 when she was having her first kid. So it was like we grew up together. But she wasn't, like, she was such a cool mom. Now, don't get me wrong. You have your days where you're like, for God's sake, mom. But no, we were so close. So, so close.
So you and your mom decided to go into business together.
I started. She always had this really good way of, like, encouraging you, but trying to get her way at the same time, if you know what I mean. So she's like, yeah, go for that audition. That would be really good. But what if you set up your own dance school here? So I finished college and I was working in AWARE and I was loving life. And, you know, I was only young and it was great. And we were just sitting at the kitchen table, this, like, famous kitchen table. And I was like, right, let's just set up some dance classes. So we were, like, brainstorming names, and she loved brainstorming names, and it was really embarrassing. But she was like, what about Backstreet? And I was like, yeah, it's kind of cool. And it just stuck. And we made up these flyers on, you know, the big computers that we used to have, and the little numbers that people were able to pull off. And she went down to the community centre, rented out, like, a tiny room, not much bigger than this. And we just put the posters up in the local shops. And, like, within the first day, like, my sisters were getting kicked out of the first class because we didn't have any room.
Wow.
So we had to then move to, Scouts den the next week because it just had extra space. But, yeah, that's how Backstreet really started. And for 3 years, we just loved life. I was teaching, like, on a Monday and a Thursday and working in AWARE then the other days, and we'd go shopping, we'd go to Blanchardstown. Like, life was just so good back then. But yeah, you take that for granted. You know, I thought life was hard, but it wasn't. It was so good. She would take the fees. So it was like replicating what I had for my ballet classes, where the mammy would sit outside, take the fees, and then Miss Cole was in teaching the classes. So she was doing that, and, like, all the mammies used to be chatting to her, and she'd get all the gossip, and she loved it. And then things just started to kind of grow for us 3 years later. Well, it was actually 2 years later that we started to look for a premises. But that was her encouraging me all the time. Why don't you do this? Why don't you, you know, why don't you set this up? This could be. And we eventually found a place that was just, it was just land at the time. And what are they called? The estate agent was saying, we have this building that's going to be built in the next year and a half. It's 5,000 square foot, so it's pretty big. And we were like, okay, let's go for it. Like, 5,000 square foot from, you know, like a tiny hall, mm-hmm. Which we had then moved to, like, a gym studio that had mirrors, and it was, like, the best thing ever. So we were there for about a year while the studio was being built in the background. Nobody knew it was happening. We would literally drive past it every single day. Every time there was a piece of muck moved, it was like, we're nearly there, we're nearly there. And that's when we became official business partners.
And is that still the studio to this day?
Yeah, it'll be there for the rest of my life.
Wow. So you and your mum were on this really exciting journey together.
Yeah.
So you obviously, it's that support from your mum, isn't it? That you kind of believe you can do anything because of
the pep talks. Yeah, and it's just like you just have that team. you know. And don't get me wrong, it's not easy working with family sometimes, and my sisters will say that, and they kind of know a little bit more now, they realize. But back in the day when they were a little bit younger, they were like, oh my God, can we not talk about work when you come home? But it was the only time that we could actually talk about work, because mm-hmm. when you're in work, you're working.
Yeah.
You know, but I think they realize that now, the amount of work that actually went into their home. Like, they lived there. They probably not by choice half the time, but they loved it. And it's still like, Amy still teaches there. Like,
Claire Solon speaks to me a lot about finding your tribe. Mm. And I didn't really understand what that meant until I realized that the girls that I've met through Breast Cancer Ireland are my tribe. Yeah. Now, I have friends, I've best friends, but I feel like when you speak about finding your tribe, they're the girls for me, because it's like, you just get each other. It's you're kind of on a different level with these people than you, or have a different connection. Do you find that through the dance world, like, that's your tribe?
Yes, but we've obviously come through a lot. We've come through people that we thought were our tribe that weren't, you know, and it's only when things start to get good for you that people then start to back up. If you know what I mean. So we've lost a lot of what we thought were really close friends throughout the years, which was really, really hard. Like, it was heartbreakingly hard, because these were people that you would see every single day in work, or you'd meet for a coffee, or you'd go on trips away, like weekends away. Their kids, you'd have them from the time they were three up until like they were 16. And then for them just to turn is really something that is hard to deal with. It's made us stronger, for sure. Personally, it's definitely made us stronger. And I think since the last time it happened, we were able to just brush it off, because it was happening quite often. Mm. Unfortunately, sometimes people don't like to see you succeed, or they don't even realize the amount of work that goes on in the background. They just see the success side of things. So that was quite difficult for us, but you know, there was days where my mom would have to pick me up, and then there'd be days where I'd have to pick her up, and then we'd be looking at each other going, what are we doing? Like, we're the ones that are working our asses off here, and we're the ones that are giving all of these kids somewhere to go and come off the streets. If people don't want to be part of that, we can't do anything about that. But I think now we have a really small, tight-knit tribe that I've had forever. And I think I will have forever. And I'd take that any day. Mm. You know, once you can have trust in somebody, or two people or three people, I'm good with that.
Yeah.
I'm really good at that, yeah.
I think as you get older, your circle just gets smaller. A little bit smaller, yeah. Doesn't it? Tell us then about little Bo Pip. Obviously, then you went on, got married, you had two kids, gorgeous kids, Jaden and Pippa. And then little Bo Pip was born.
Like, this just happened on a plane coming home from LA. I'm not even joking. Me and Gav ended up, obviously we had Jaden, and he is just like just little boys, or there's just something so special about them. But he's, when I found out I was having a boy, I was thinking, oh geez, I'm not going to be able to cope with a boy. Because you would just think boys are mental and hyper
and wreck your house.
The walls and wreck your house. But he was different. He is such, and always has been, such a good little boy that he just warms your heart. And then when Pippa came along, it was like out with the blue and in with the pink. And Gav was like, Nick, that buggy is perfect. I was like, get rid of it. You know, everything was just turned around. And of course, I just wanted like to dress her like a little princess and put bows in her hair and all of this. But I just couldn't find anything that either wasn't even a mark on her head, or that was like decent and pretty and, you know. So we were in LA, literally walked the streets. Gav was over there. He was collecting an award. And I was like, we have to try and find bows for Pippa. And he was like, okay, you know, priorities. couldn't find anything. And then he just made this flippant comment, why don't you just make some? Buy the fabric and make it then, because you know what you want in your head. And I was like, okay. Because my mom was a dressmaker, so she was very much hands-on, very creative. And when we went home, he said it to my mom. And of course, she was like, oh my God, right, I'll get the sewing machine out. Da-da-da-da-da. And I was like, guys, calm down. Like, I'll just go down to Claire's Accessories if I have to. I ended up making both. Right. But I was making them for her and her only. That was all I ever wanted. So I just wanted them for her. And my sisters would mind her during the week while I'd go to work, and they'd take her down to the pavilions. And like Chrissy or Amy would come home and they're like, oh my God, if one more person asks me where you got her bow from. And again, at the kitchen table.
I'll get back to my conversation with Nikki in just a minute. But first, I wanted to give you an update on the benefits I'm seeing from using my Fitbit Versa 2. Fitbit allows you to get to know yourself better, to understand your health with data and insights that are unique to you. As I always say, knowledge is power, and Fitbit provides data about your health and well-being to help empower and support you in leading a balanced and healthy lifestyle. I love being able to track my sleep, keep an eye on my resting heart rate over time, as well as capture key stats from my workouts. I'm so happy to have Fitbit on board, as it helps to keep me focused and on track with my goals and training. Now, back to Nikki. Do you look at that time now, like that was only recently, yeah. But do you look at that time now as kind of the good old days?
Yeah.
Do you?
Yeah, definitely.
Your mum got sick in May 2016. Mm. And I've spoken to Pippa on my podcast about losing her mum and how difficult that was for her. But I haven't really touched on it since. And when we were on the phone to each other during the week, I said, would it be okay if we spoke about your mum? And you said, I will never, ever stop talking about
her.
Never.
Yeah.
So
I can't look at you because then I'll get...
Don't look over here either. Sorry, no.
What was that time like when you found out your mum was sick?
Traumatic. It was probably the hardest time of my life. Nothing kind of prepared us for it. Like, I never get upset. Nothing prepared us for it. Nothing.
And I think that's sometimes what the most traumatizing thing is the shock. And I always say that when I found my lump, at least it broke my fall, because I had those days, I had that lump, which was the warning sign that I had cancer, and I knew deep down that I did. But you said that your mum just went for a blood test.
Like a random blood test. She was the core to our family. So there was no way that she could be sick. But we look back now and we laugh and we think, Jesus, like she was suffering with her teeth. And, you know, she'd be kind of sitting there with her hand up against her face. And we'd be like, is it your teeth again, ma'am? Type of a thing, you know. And it was kind of a family joke at the time because it was kind of going on for quite a while. But never was any question like about her health ever. But to kind of bring it back, like, we had been on holidays, we go away to Portugal every Easter. That's our time. We take our kids, we take our family, and we're a family, and work doesn't exist. And that's something that we just randomly started. Like, we never went on holidays at Easter. You couldn't afford to go on holidays at Easter, but we didn't ever think about it. But for some reason, we just started this little tradition where we'd all go on holidays together. Because Kriya, my youngest sister, and Jaden were so close in age. It's like 5 years between them. So they grew up like a brother and sister together. So we always did everything that we could. So we were away. Again, never thought anything of it. We came home, went back to work. She had like a little bit of a cold on a Monday. It was gone on Tuesday. And then on Wednesday, I came into work and she was kind of in the little kitchen area first. I came in to say good morning to her and she turned around to me. She had like these cold sores on her lips. And I was like, Jesus, where did they come from? Now, she'd get cold sores because that was just her thing. But these were kind of different looking cold sores. And I said, please go down to the doctor and get your bloods checked. You're low on something. Again, not even for a second, even dreaming of anything. So she went down to the local doctor, and it was the doctor's wife. She's a nurse down there. And she seen my mom and she took her bloods and she's like, you look a bit pale. And she was like, I'm just back from Portugal. I am not pale. But it was like as if it was somebody different looking at her. Mm. Like, we didn't notice anything different.
Yeah, because you see her every day.
You see her every day. Like, and yeah. She always took a good colour. Like, she loves the sun. And but yet she looked pale to the doctor's wife. I said, I'm just back from Portugal. So anyway, they did the bloods. And she said, listen, if you don't hear back from me in a week, give me a shout. On Thursday afternoon, lunchtime, like it wasn't even 24 hours later, I walked into the house and she was kind of pacing the landing. I was like, is everything all right? And she said, a Bowman just rang me. And I was like, okay. And she said, they've asked me to come in. I was like, okay, go. And she's like, I don't want to go. And I was like, go. Like, it was coming up to the Maybank holiday weekend. And she's like, I'm not going in there. And I've told them I need to go back to work. I was like, ma'am, just go in. You'll get to the end of it now. And, you know, they'll give you whatever supplements you need to get. So she kind of like paced a bit. I never even thought anything of it. I was like, I'll drop you in. It's cool. Don't worry about it. Forget about work. We'll just take the afternoon off. And anyway, she went in, forced to go in. And she was on a chair in A&E then until the Saturday.
Oh, God.
And I wanted to stay with her, but she was like, go home. So I think I left at about 3 a.m. or something like that. And I came back in the next morning and I'll never forget it. I'll never forget it. Like, I walked into A&E and I kind of looked to the right and she was just like pacing the corridor, like as if she was really panicked, like on her own. And like, she was kind of like hyperventilating a bit. And I was like, is everything all right? Like, what's wrong? She's like, I just need to get out of here. I feel like they're not telling me something. And I was a bit panicky then. So I sat her down. I had brought her in a little fresh salad roll and we sat there and they were cleaning down trolleys and stuff. And they took her up to the ward then on the Saturday, but then discharged her pretty much straight away. And they said, listen, come in to oncology on Tuesday after the bank holiday. And
had they been running more tests on her when she was anemic? In A&E?
That's all we heard was, right, you're anemic. And I was like, I told you, you were low in something. But then it was when she heard the oncology word, it didn't click with me. Mm. That's how naive I was, even at that age. I just...
Because you're not in that world.
I'm not. I wasn't in that world. When my granny had it, I was completely sheltered by that. Mm. And I was like, Mom, why are you so worried about the oncology? And she was like, again, she was like protecting me. It doesn't matter. So they took her in on the Tuesday and they'd done a bone marrow test, a spinal tap on her on that Tuesday. And then she got the results. No, sorry, they did that on the Wednesday. And then she was called in on the Friday for results. And I went with her, me and my dad. And that's literally, it was like knocking down Jenga in seconds. And I know that you know that feeling of just like, that can't be the words that has just come out of his mouth.
So she was diagnosed with leukemia.
Leukemia. Yeah. And I think, not that I could accept that part, it was the chemo word that petrified me more than anything. That chemo word was like, that's not happening.
Because you don't want to see your mum suffer like that.
You only hear the bad stuff about that, you know? And she just looked at me and I just said, don't worry about it. Like, I'll sort it. You know, and it was like an immediate change of roles.
Yeah. She was looking to you now.
Yeah.
Because obviously...
My dad was frozen. He couldn't... I was worried about him because he has a heart condition. I was just like, I needed to stay calm. And I did. I crashed when I got outside the door because it was like, you know, she's not in front of me. I can cry for a second. I rang Gav and it was like he couldn't even make out what I was saying on the phone because he knew what we were together, you know?
Mm. You lost your mum then in April 2018. Mm-hmm. So it was less than 2 years.
Less than 2 years, yeah.
After she was diagnosed. And you as the eldest child, is there an extra layer of responsibility on your shoulders through that time? Or
I don't think it's put on me. I just take it. Like when she was diagnosed, I ran away with her. They wanted her to start chemo the following Tuesday. And I obviously couldn't give my opinion at that time right there and then. But when we left, you know, she didn't want to do chemo and I didn't want her to do chemo. It was against anything that we ever truly believed in. So I ran away with her. I took her away to Spain for 3 weeks.
Did you?
Yeah.
And who went?
I took her first. I got on a plane with her and we masked her up and I took her to Barcelona. I found this apartment that was just on the sea and we spent a week there. She was on like a raw vegan diet. We had the crack. We killed each other. We were meant to go home. I was meant to go home after a week because obviously my kids were at home and Pippa was really young at the time. And I decided that I couldn't put the pressure on one of my sisters to do what I was doing. I just felt like they weren't really, it wasn't their job to have to do that as much as they were absolutely willing to. But I went home. No, we drove to Portugal, back to our special place. I went home and I got my kids and I went back within 24 hours. I was gone home and back to Portugal within 12 hours. And then my dad and Creo flew over then for the final week. And I just remember saying to her afterwards, like she was getting her bloods done every 2 days. She attended a natural doctor over there. And I just remember saying to her kind of halfway through her treatment, because when we got home, like the doctors were tapping their fingers and they were like, are you ready now? Are you done with this kind of carry on? And, you know, if I had just had a little bit more time. But she decided that she wanted to start the chemo and I supported her on it. It killed me, but I supported her on it. And the whole family, we all supported her on it 100% because she was like, I'm going to do this. And I'd no doubt in my mind that she wasn't going to do it. But it's kind of a journey that you don't ever expect yourself to be on, you know? And when she was starting her treatment was kind of into the summer. And she was due to start kind of that July and me and Gav were already planned to go away for 3 weeks with the kids and I just wasn't going and that was that. And I remember she pulled me into the hospital room and she said, I need you to go. You have to go. This is your family. I said, I'm not going unless I can take Korea with me. So she said, that's your job. Take her. So I took her just to protect her from what she could have seen, you know. But I think being away from what I was so engrossed with was really hard, you know. But my sisters had it. My sisters and my dad, they had her back. And, you know, she did so well after her first round of chemo. And I just wanted to get home.
Mm. I was like, get that's where you felt like your heart
just
was at home.
Get me home to her. I just want to see her. I just need to hug her. I just need to see what her levels are like.
Yeah.
Like I'd text her every day, what's your blood levels? And she's like, for God's sake, Nick, you're on holidays. Like, but I needed to know. And I know that, like what I was just about to say, halfway through the treatment, I was like, do you ever regret going? Like running away. And she's like, I'll never regret it. Because not only did it give us our time, but it gave her time to process it.
Mm.
She was like, I would never have been strong enough ever to get through what she actually did get through without having that time to digest it. Because she came back ready.
Ready. She was ready, like, to
get me on,
give
here.
It her all.
Yeah.
Because it's so true what you say, like, often, you know, when you're diagnosed with cancer and it's, you just go straight into treatment.
Yeah.
Like, I was on maternity leave when I was diagnosed, and all of a sudden I had this full-time job.
Yeah.
Of going out there, and you don't go to bed. You're out there fighting for your life,
yeah.
You know, going to appointments, getting treatment. And that is a lot. It's a different world. So that time that you had together,
yeah,
was obviously so special.
It was so special. And like, I did the whole diet thing with her, and it was so funny. I was like, I'm just going to pop to the shop and get some more water. And I was like, scoffing a load of donuts. I'm such a sugar buzz, you know. And she was like, I know you have crisps hidden under your pillow. And, you know, so we had, I'll never forget that time, ever. Forget
so special
it.
To you.
It was so special, but it was so scary.
Mm.
It was so scary because we did not know. We didn't know how or why this was happening. How did this happen? You know, and that was something for her that was like, why did this happen to me?
And how did you get yourself through that time? Like, somebody said yesterday it was World Cancer Day, and one of my friends was giving a talk, and she said, when you're diagnosed with cancer, it's so final. Like, there's yeah. nothing you can do about it.
No, and this is where I think I've so much respect for you, because you don't, you know, like, you don't hear the success stories.
Mm-hmm.
You're just a percentage. This is your chance, you know, and you're like, well, what side of the chance am I on? And that was something that I always said to my mom. I was like, think of the positive sides. Look at that person. Like, look at that person who was diagnosed with leukemia that is now, you know, has their hair back and is living their life. But that's never the first thing that you see as a patient or as a family. You don't see that. You have to look for it, you know. And I think what you're doing is so incredibly brave and unbelievable for the families out there that are suffering, because there's so many people. It's sickening, the amount of people that are dealing with cancer.
Mm.
It's wrong, like.
And did you turn to your husband during that time?
Oh God, yes, 100%. But I'm my own worst enemy. I like to deal with things. I'll deal with it. I don't want you to worry about it. You know, he was so close to my mom. Like, we used to joke about things. I'm like, you're her son-in-law. You know, you can't speak to her that way. Or,
yeah.
Mom, you can't look at him like that. Or, you know, but that was the relationship that they had. So, like, and it proves, because my mom never spoke to me on that level. Ever. As much as I thought I knew, I didn't want to know that we were coming to that stage.
Mm-hmm.
I was always just keep going positive. You know, you're going to do this. You're going to write that book. And it was Mother's Day that I knew that she was not well. Like, she was not well. And I said to her, I will take you to the hospital now. This was on the Sunday. We had taken her away to the hotel for the weekend. And sorry, I had pulled the nurses on the Friday, and I never pull doctors or nurses, ever did I. But I just cornered two of them. I went to get my mom a glass of water, and I just pulled the two of them. And I said, I need you to be real with me now. Like, my sister Amy was touring America with singing. David was in Australia. And I was like, I need you to be real. What's happening? And they were like, Nikki, you know, this is probably time to maybe give them a shout. I said, give me time. Like, give me a time. And they were like, we could give you a time, but this is Tina. She could go months.
Mm-hmm.
She could go another year, because she out weighed anything they ever said. And I was like, can I take her away for the weekend? And they said, okay, take her. So I booked Druids Glen. And she woke up on the next morning. She was like, my gums were bleeding. And I was like, okay. And she said, I don't know what to do. And I think if I hadn't had that chat with the nurses, I probably would have had a different response. But I said to her, I can take you in now, or we can go to the hotel. And she said, let's go to the hotel. So I thought, let's go. We'll deal with it. So we went to the hotel. Like, I have the most precious photographs of her and my kids. She ate an entire dinner, starter, main course, dessert that she has never eaten in I don't know how long. We just had the most magical time in that one night. But then I knew that something wasn't right. So the next day she was really unwell, and Gav was sitting on the stairs. He had dropped Jade into school, and she was in the bed, and he was like, Nick, I need you to get here, get here, get here. And I was like, it's fine, I'm on the way. Got there, and she just looked at me and she's like, please don't look. And I was like, you know, we've done this, ma'am. Don't be afraid of anything. Let's just get her down the stairs. So we got her down the stairs, into the car, over to Beaumont. And that's when I had to make the hardest phone call to Amy to come home. She was living her dream, like.
So was everybody home then?
I don't know how Amy got home from America so fast. Like, I don't know how she got home, but she did. And then I had to speak to David. And he was obviously so much further away. And he was like, I just want a time. How much time do I have? I need to pack everything up. And I said, I can't give you a time. I've just been asked to give you a shout to get home. So he got home as quick as he could. It took a couple of days. He obviously had a lot more to kind of organize and to pack up. But I did pull the doctor, and I said, and it was one of her doctors, and I said, I need to know where we're going from here. And he said, your mom is going to be in this hospital for another 3 weeks. And he gave me such a positive feel that I was like, okay, have I just pulled Amy up for nothing? You know? But then her oncologist came in and had a different view to her, to him, and said it to her while she was really down. And she called my husband in. She asked me to go, and she called Gavin in. And that's when I knew. I knew then. Because she then told him things that he'll always hold that time. And I think it was so special because she trusted him. She was able to talk to him on a different level. She told him her wishes that, you know, I could never have even brought myself, even though I knew them, because we just had this, we just knew each other. But the things that she said to him, I know he'll always be grateful for that time.
Because everyone has this kind of different role, don't they? And she obviously didn't want to have that conversation with you. She wanted to have it with him.
Yeah. But even right to the end, she never had that conversation. And that's something that's really difficult. And that's something, you know, that I think kind of gets in the way of the grieving process. She didn't tell me what to do. Like, she was such a bossy boots. She told me what to do for everything. But she never told me what to do now.
Do you think that she thought that you just know what to do?
Yeah, she probably did. But there's days when you doubt yourself all the time, especially when it comes to my youngest sister. Like, she was only 14. You know, like, how she witnessed things that she should never. Like, I felt like I was too young to witness what I witnessed. For her to witness that will never leave me. You know, she should never have to witness that. So it was like, what do I do now? you know.
People, somebody said to me that they were talking to me about your family, and they said, since your mum has died, that all of these amazing things started happening to you guys. I don't know who said it to me. It might have been at the Suzanne Jackson eyelash launch. But somebody said that to me. And I thought about that conversation I had with Pippa O'Connor. He said that 2 weeks after her mum died, that she went ahead with her first fashion factory, and everything changed on that day in her business and in her life. And I see your family all doing so well now. Do you feel like there's a light shining on you guys?
Absolutely. And that's something that I think is a conscious decision, whether you want that light to be there or whether you don't. And, you know, people just say, they sometimes, like, and I said that to you, sometimes they're afraid to mention her. I'm like, don't ever be afraid to mention her, ever. You know, we talk about her all day, every day. Like, there's not a day that goes by that we don't mention mom, or to my kids, mom in the house. My kids speak about her all the time. And it's, you know, I just say to them, you have to take her with you, because I couldn't leave her behind. I couldn't even dream of leaving her behind. So I take her with me in everything that I do. And I know the rest of them are the same, you know. And but it's like as if you've been broken, but there's this strength just pushing you all the time. You're just being pushed, like we're floating. We're almost coming up to 2 years, which I can't even, you know, get my head around. But we are floating. And we are being pushed. And I have no doubt that she's using that strength to push us, you know. And I think just even with her own, like, final wishes have helped us with that. Like, down to the detail of she wanted her ashes into the beach, and the tide was had to be all the way out, and we had to walk all the way out together. And, you know, so we go to the beach to see her. And like the kids call it Mom's Beach, and that's where
that beach in Portugal?
This is in Malahide.
Oh, in Malahide.
Now, some of her ashes are in Majorca and in Portugal because they were her favourite places. Mm. And she did say that I'll be at every beach that you go to. So that's something that she left us with.
Yeah.
That no matter where we go, we take her with us all the time.
Because she was a big part of Terry and David's wedding.
Huge.
Even though she wasn't there, she was a huge part of the day. And was that, it's kind of bittersweet. Like, you're so happy for your brother who's marrying this beautiful girl and they're so in love, but yet your mum wasn't there.
Yeah.
But she was.
She was there.
Yeah.
Like, she was absolutely there. And I remember getting out of the car, and they use the same wedding planners as us. And I was so close to my wedding planners because they were just amazing. And we were lining up ready to walk down to this like unbelievable cliff that was just surrounded by ocean. And she was lining us up and she said, now I need just to kind of sit into this area. And she had like the name plan and everybody's name was on the chair. And when I looked at the name plan, Tina was on it. And for like, Georgie, for that split second, I was like, it's over. And I actually looked, I was like, it's over. And then I looked back at her and she was like, and she just put her hand on me and she's like, it's okay. I was finished. I was like, okay, right, we're not in that dream anymore, you know. But like, she had her chair. Her chair was there beside my dad. She was like her little wave sign was incorporated onto the invitations. My little sister Kriya sat in her chair at the top table. So she was so involved and she was there. There was no way she was going to miss it, you know. But it was just shitty that she wasn't physically there.
Mm. Do you, like, You know the way, is it a cliche to say like it brought you guys closer together? Because you were obviously such a close family as it was. Like, how could you get any closer?
Yes and no. Because yes, we have always been an incredibly tight family. And that was something my mom always wanted. Like, you stick by each other. And like, she had issues with some of her family members that were really nasty to her throughout her whole life, right up until the very last day, you know. So she never wanted that for her family. And if there was anything ever going on between us, like, get your act together, sort it out, your heads be banged together, that kind of thing, yeah. You know. But then I see, being the eldest, looking at the others, everybody deals with things completely different. Like, Amy has her music and she takes her grief out and, you know, writes songs or goes to the beach. And, you know, Chrissy deals with things completely different. Kriya deals with things very much identical to me. She swallows everything, you know, and I kind of need to keep an eye on that. And then David deals with things completely different. I know it's hard for him because he was away for a lot of the treatment side of things. So we witnessed a different side of that part of life. But we'll always be close. No matter what, always be close, but we have to be there for each other and we have to be able to know if Chrissy's having a bad day or if Amy's having a bad day or if Kriya's having a bit, and then my dad, like, you know. So it's just a case of everybody knowing everybody's weaknesses and struggles to be able to deal with that and to kind of approach people as the days go. Like, you know, you could have an amazing day and then all of a sudden it's like, oh Jesus, and it's that waft of like pressure on your chest and like your day's done because you're kind of going, right now I can't do this, I can't, and it's just this negative on top of you, even though your day started out fine. But it's like a waft of reality type of a thing.
Yeah, and I totally understand what you mean by that, because I always say that, like, when you have a bad day, you don't wake up in the morning and it's a bad day from like the time you open your eyes. You could be having a great day and then at 3 o'clock, it's like, boom, everything changes.
Yeah.
And that's something that I didn't really understand until I really understood what a bad day consists of.
Yeah.
And how do you heal? It's been, like you say, almost 2 years, which is a very short amount of time. You're still in the grieving process. But how, if there's people listening to this who are going through something similar, like, what advice do you have for them?
Well, like I was saying to you earlier, I get asked daily, like multiple times, and that's no word of a lie. And especially if I would post something about my mom or something, like, how do you deal with this? Like, people saying that they've lost their parents or their mother's just been diagnosed. And, you know, and it's very hard for me to give that answer when I don't even know. I don't know. All I know is I have no choice. I have my two kids, I have my family, and I have my husband that, and I have work that is literally, and then I have my mom behind me that's just pushing me every single day. Like, there's not one day that I have not gotten out of that bed. Not one day. And I keep thinking, should I? Should I take advantage of staying in bed all day? But I haven't had that where I can't get up in the morning. My kids and Kriya keep me going and keep all of us going more than they'll ever know. Like, this, what's on their shoulders that they don't realize, they're carrying, all of us. And I think Pippa, for instance, she grieved before any of us. You know, we haven't started because we haven't come to terms with anything yet. We haven't come to terms with diagnosis. We haven't come to terms with treatment. We haven't come to terms with that she's not here. But Pippa did. And it was a really, really tough time for us as her parents to witness such a small little girl grieve. I'd never experienced it before. I had experienced my mom grieving after her mom, and I noticed her change. I was 9. I noticed my mom change. But my, like, the rest of the kids wouldn't, because they were all born after that. So who mm-hmm. my mom was their mom. But I know the mom that I had before that.
Mm.
And she changed. And I just knew that I needed to do something straight away, because I didn't want my kids to live in this life of anxiety and stress. And like, life is like that anyway, but I didn't want this to be added to them. So one of the preschool teachers suggested to take Pippa to play therapy. And I'm open to all of those things. There's, you know, some people might be a little bit, what's that going to do? It's a waste of money. It's a money scam, you know?
Mm.
I said, well, I'm willing to try anything. I don't care what it takes. I'm willing to try it. So I spoke to this lady on the phone. Rita is her name. And I had an instant connection with her on the phone. And it was like things that she explained to me. She was like, you're frozen. You have to see it as an iceberg. And you've got, you know, your water is just floating over, and that's where your anxiety is. But deep down is where your grief really is. But we needed to sort Pippa, and I needed to sort her quick. She went completely in on herself. She wasn't speaking. She had pains in her tummy. She cried in her sleep looking for my mom. And it was just horrific. But I was numb to that. And I remember David sitting in the sitting room one day, one of the evenings, and I had put Pippa to bed. And I heard her crying on the monitor, and I went up to her, and not realizing that he could hear on the monitor, I was like, what's the matter? And she was like, I just miss my mom so much. Why did she have to go? And asking those questions. So I answered her as best as I could and walked back down the stairs, sat down at my cup of tea, and David's looking at me with his jaw on the floor going, how did you do that? And I was like, what else can I do? It was just... it was something that myself and Gav needed to make that decision. Do we put our child through this now, or do we wait and see if she's going to be okay? Mm. She didn't play with her friends. She wouldn't speak. She would not leave my side, because to her, and as I learned as the kind of weeks and months went on, her mom never said goodbye. You know, and she was like, why did she leave me, mommy? Why did she go? And then it was like, she never took her phone. How is she going to text us? So it was like, I have to deal with this now, because it's heartbreaking to watch such a small little girl go through it, you know? So we did. And we sent her to her first session. And the therapist called me in and she said, I don't usually do this, but I need to show you this. It was the most powerful sandbox she'd ever experienced with any child, never mind a three-year-old. And I'll show you the picture after. But in this, it's like a little attic room, very like this, and all along the walls is all these tiny little miniature figurines. They could mean something to you but mean something completely different to me, and they're normal toys that you'd find in Smith's. There might be a dinosaur, there might be a dragon, all different things that can symbolize something to a child. So the therapist literally sits there and, you know, asks her questions. Pick out who you think is your mommy or who's your family, you know. And she had me. I had long hair. She had her as a little princess. Her daddy was a panda. Jaden was a smaller panda. And then there was loads of like tiny little fairies and babies. And then there was on the other side of it was a figure in a chair. And when Rita called me up to the room, she said, don't say anything. Just let me ask her the questions. So she had kind of pointed out, and who's this? This is my mommy, and this is my daddy, and 3 years of age. And who's this? Oh, that's my mama. And she said, and what's she doing? She's in the hairdressers. She had long hair at this stage. Okay, and who's this? This is my mama now, because she has short hair. And something clicked with me afterwards. She sees her as two people.
Mm.
I seen her as two people in my head. When I thought of my mom, I thought of my mom, blonde hair, gorgeous, just a natural beauty. But yet I could still just see her not being well.
Yeah.
So if I'm seeing that, she obviously, but that was her way of explaining that. So Rita said to me, do you notice anything about the sandbox, Nikki? And I was like, kind of hold myself together. And I was like, no, I don't notice anything. And she said, nothing at all. I said, no. Every figure was facing down to the left corner. And my mom with the short hair was facing to the back, facing the sea. Every figure, like every angel, every fairy, every dog, every single figure, the box was full, were facing to the left corner, and my mom was facing away. And I was like, well, what does that symbolize? And she said, yous are not ready to go there yet, but your mom is okay.
Wow.
And I was just floored. I was like, how?
A three-year-old.
So of course I was like, I got Pippa into the car and I was like, that was a beautiful sandbox. Did Rita tell you where to put things? Or, no. What was Rita doing? And she was like, just asking me questions. Or I was like, did you pick all of, like, because it's so hard for you to understand that this is such a powerful way of therapy, but easy on the child. And Georgie, within 3 weeks, we had a different little girl. Like, it was phenomenal. A little girl that would not go into her ballet class, which she loved and went to absolutely no bother. It was that separation thing of, well, my mom never said goodbye, so are you going to go?
Mm.
Or that was her fear, you know, and that can be an adult fear as well. Is something that you love so much can be gone in a second. And I think we have learned so much over the last, not just 2 years since she's gone, but over the last 4 years, that you have to embrace every single second. And I'm guilty of it, not doing it, absolutely. And there's times where I nearly smack myself in the face, or I feel like smacking other people in the face, that you're like, look at what we actually have around us. But yet we're so worried about everything and everybody else.
Mm.
And then Jaden started his therapy sessions with, and Kriya as well, a couple of weeks ago. They don't speak about it, and that's okay. Once they're okay with it, I'm okay, you know. But we got to see the difference in Pippa within that 6-week course was just unbelievable.
Wow, that was such an amazing gift for your child to do that.
I'd recommend it to anybody.
Tell us then about the photo of you guys, your whole family sitting on the stairs. Everyone's on a different step. And you're holding up a scan.
Yeah.
Tell me, was this the first time everyone in your family found out you were pregnant?
Yeah.
So when was this photo taken?
Christmas morning. Okay. So myself and Gav found out that I was pregnant, obviously a couple of weeks previous. And ideally, I would have liked to wait a little bit longer. But my best friend Jen and Gav were like, listen, Nick, you don't get this opportunity of Christmas morning ever again. Like, you know. And I was like, okay, so I had ordered t-shirts. I'm going to be a big brother again, and I'm going to be a little sister, or I'm going to be a big sister. And they took me in for an early scan, and I had the scan pictures. And my sisters didn't know, and I was petrified.
Your dad?
Nobody. Not one person knew. And we had breakfast in... they have a sleepover in my house on Christmas Eve because it's really important to me that Kriya has Christmas morning. Mm-hmm. And that was one of the things my mum said. And this was like during transplant time when she was in over Christmas. Please make sure that the kids have Christmas. It was the most amazing time for us as kids. So that was my job. So they sleep with me on Christmas Eve. And then we went to David and Terry's on Christmas morning. So we have this tradition where we swap and change between breakfast or dinner.
Yeah.
And then we alternate as the years go on. So we went for breakfast there, and we always do the presents. Like, everybody has to take their time. Nobody can move on to the next person until they open their presents. It's chaos, but it's life, and it's just everything to us. And we live for the, like, the silly presents, or you always leave Amy to last because she's like, you know, princess, and where's my present? And she always got left to last. And then I just presented the kids with this box each, and they had their names on it. And we would usually surprise them every year with something. And everybody automatically thought it was going to be a trip, because last year we surprised them with a trip to New York. And I knew I was going to throw them with that. And we let Jaden read the little note and just how special they were. And this was their wish for so long. And, you know, that wishes come true and not just dreams come true. And then when they opened the box, like, I don't know, have you heard the video? The screams in the background. And Jaden, of course, knew what it said because he could read. But Pippa was just sitting there going, what is it? Like, what is it? What is it? And Ryan, Amy's boyfriend, just captured the moment like so perfectly that she was like looking at everybody screaming, and she was like, well, where are we going? You know? And Jaden just whispered to her, because he's so good to her, and he just whispered, he's like, mommy's gonna have a baby. And you could see her face, just her eyes, and she just looked at me and she looked at Jaden, and she says, it's like, I was sitting there going, is someone gonna hug me? And then Jaden just like threw his arms around her, and they just had that moment amongst complete chaos. And I was like, this is for them, but it's also for the rest of our family. It just gives us that little bit of hope and focus and excitement, I think, that it's all at my expense. But to see everybody's reaction, and they're so excited, and, you know, it hasn't really sank in for me, let alone the rest of them yet, but it's just a little bit of joy, I think, that's going to...
A new life for your family.
Yeah.
And I know that it's still so hard for you all.
Yeah.
But, you know, I always say the sun comes out again, and for people who are going through a really tough time, and your life will never be the same again, but you can have moments of feeling happy again.
And that's something that I've really started to bring back with Pippa now, because she's that little bit older, and in the last couple of days she's starting to take a couple of steps backwards. She's starting to ask questions and kind of say things that I would never expected her to say. Like, she has cried the last couple of nights going to bed because she misses her mum, you know, and you can only kind of talk over it for a certain length of time, where then you're like, this is not her looking for attention. She's actually crying. Like, you know the difference between a child crying and a child that's really upset. And I said to her that it's okay for us to be happy. Mom told me that it's okay for you to be happy. And she's like, but it's not fair. And she just passed a comment the other night in the car on the way to a class, and she's never used the D word. I haven't really either. But she said, it's not fair that she died before I got to the house. And I was like, what? And she said, I didn't get to Mum's house on time. And I said, baby, she didn't die in the house. I said, she was in the hospital with all the doctors, and I was there with her. Like, she was okay. And she was, obviously this is going through her mind that, well, why was her special bed in the house? You know, my mom had this like magnificent wicker basket that was just phenomenal as her casket. And it wasn't scary for the kids or anything like that. But I said, that was her special basket that was going to take her to heaven. You know, and these are obviously things now that she's that little bit older that are going through her head, you know, but the fact that she's able to talk about it is a huge thing, you know. And, you know, people could say to you, oh God, you know, maybe just, you know, tell her to turn on her side and go to sleep. I want her to talk about it, so that it's not a ball of anxiety in her belly in a year or two or 10 years' time. And I said to her, do you feel better now? And she said, yeah. I said, it's really good to talk. Now, come here, I could take a leaf out of her book sometimes because I'm useless at that, but I don't want her to be that way. And I want her and my brothers and sisters and my dad and anybody out there that's dealing with this grief, that it's okay to be happy. It is okay. And you have to find your happiness again, you know, and it's hard. And you feel like you shouldn't be, but it's also okay to be sad. And it's okay to have those days and to, like, just, you know, everybody talks about living in the moment. Some of those moments are hard and some of those moments are sad. And I think you have to let yourself be in them, as well as be in the moment when something great is happening or there's fun or there's excitement, you know, because life is hard.
You are an incredible person and an incredible mum. And it was an honor to sit down with you today. And thank you for letting us all get to know your mum more. And we can see now.
I'm sorry for getting so upset.
You're amazing. And now we can see how, why and how you're such an amazing mum, because you had an amazing person to learn from.
Yeah, I did.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to the Good Glow podcast with thanks to Fitbit. If you're enjoying this podcast, please hit the subscribe button and leave a review. For more on my story, you can follow me on Instagram at georgie.crawford.